Welcome to the Rockstar Achievers Podcast with your host, Catherine M. White, founder and CEO of Accelerated Results 365. If you're an overachiever who's ready to hear what today's bleeding edge successful professionals are doing to create success in their business, you've come to the right place. On the show, Catherine interviews rockstar achievers who share their incredible tips, such as how they plow through roadblocks, outsmart the competition, grow a flourishing business, and reach unparalleled levels of performance. So kick back and get ready for a power-packed, insightful discussion with today's rockstar achiever.
Thank you for joining us on Rockstar Achievers today, where we highlight the achievements of remarkable individuals to help you gain the tools necessary for success in your own endeavors. Today's Rockstar Achiever is a man who has spent the last several years in the writing and production industry. And as you can imagine, being in such an industry provides the potential for many great opportunities, but only a small number of individuals actually make it through the ranks continuously and successfully. But for this gentleman, Brent Friedman is one of those who has had an incredible career full of many astounding accomplishments. I'm really excited to have you on the show today, Brent, and I would love for you to share with us some of what those accomplishments have been.
Well, thank you for having me, Catherine. Where do I start? I've been working in the entertainment industry for over 25 years. Actually, I started in the entertainment industry when I was still a junior in college at UCLA. As a writing major, I kind of lucked into selling a screenplay, and I kind of never looked back from there. I've written and rewritten a number of features. I've worked on probably dozens of television shows. I've worked also in gaming. Just most recently, probably in the last 10 years, I discovered entrepreneurship, and I started a couple companies myself, one in Los Angeles and now recently one here in Seattle. So I've had the whole breadth of experience across the entertainment industry, from being an employee to an entrepreneur, from being a writer to a producer, and I've done a lot of consulting work as well. I've spoken all over the world about something called transmedia, which is really the study of how stories can be told simultaneously across all platforms. So my experience really comes back to the heart and soul of what I do, which is writing, imagining, sitting in a room by yourself, thinking things up, writing them down, and then trying to get other people excited about them and ultimately possibly writing you a check so that you can live your life. That's the big stuff. In terms of, some really cool things that I've done, I've worked a lot in the Star Wars universe, worked on some Star Wars related TV shows like Clone Wars and Rebels. And I've also worked in the Star Trek universe, worked on the series Enterprise. I've worked for some big gaming properties, from League of Legends through Halo, Command and Conquer, and I'm working on a couple big gaming properties right now that I can't talk about. And I've worked also, like I said, in technology, and have helped recently found a company that is exploring geolocation experiences, something like Pokemon Go. In fact, we actually had a game that we created for our company called Battlecasters the year before Pokemon. That was a geolocation experience that we took to fan cons all over the country. So for me, it all comes down to telling great stories and then recently finding technologies that allow you to tell stories in different places.
Mm-hmm. So Brent, was this something that you had dreamed of or pursued as you were a young child?
Actually, no. From a pretty young age, I wanted to be an actor, and I did a lot of modeling and acting and theater work when I was growing up. And I went to UCLA specifically for the theater program. And I'll tell you a funny anecdote. My my first class at UCLA in the theater program, the school's huge, if you're not familiar with it, and I, of course, was late, and I picked the wrong class to be late to. I had a stickler of a professor, and I walked in to this acting class, and to my astonishment, everyone was on the floor, undulating, and the professor, you know, gave me the evil eye and pointed to a corner of the room and, you know, told me to get over there and get to work. And I said, well, what are we doing? And he said, you are a wave. And I kind of looked around the room and I didn't know quite how to process that. I mean, I almost felt like, okay, when this guy comes in, he's going to be late. Let's play a joke on him and see what he does. And I kind of looked around the room. I was pretty speechless. And I said, why are we being a wave? And he said, because I am the director and that is what I've told you to be. And I kind of smiled and I said, well, I would never take this part. And he goes, get out of my class.
Wow.
And that was the end of my acting career. My first day of college, I realized I needed a new major. So I'm a big advocate for being flexible in life because you never know what curveballs are going to be thrown at you. Mm-hmm. Anyway, in all truthfulness, it caused a lot of soul searching, and I had to go back and I had to really rethink what was it about acting that I loved. And when I examined it closely, I realized that so many of the, particularly the high school performances that I was in, that I had some control over, were plays that I wrote myself, and that the process of writing always felt like a means to an end. Like, I want to perform, but writing came so naturally to me. And after I had this epiphany, I thought, wow, I really enjoy the process of writing is wonderful. And yet going up in front of people always made me very nervous because I, at heart, I'm a very shy person, but it was the adrenaline rush of getting up and performing in front of people and the risk of it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know what? I could probably satisfy that adrenaline rush in other ways in my life, but why don't I actually do the thing that I seem to be really good at? It's a novel discovery. and so that was really what got me focused on, you know, let's just be a writer. And I changed my major and I became an English literature major, thinking, well, if I'm going to be a writer, I should read all of the great stuff that's been written before me. And then I took a double major eventually into creative writing. And I had my new path.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that is quite fascinating. And what you were saying about being afraid of getting up in front of people, but also feeling that adrenaline rush in doing so, I can completely relate to, as I was very shy when I was a young girl. And at the age of 12, I was in a speech class in school, and I felt that adrenaline rush that you speak of. And that in that moment, I told myself, I want to be a speaker when I grow up. And
wow.
And I still get nervous getting up in front of people. It is frightening, but I love that feeling of when you're finished and it's like, wow, I did that.
Yeah. It's a great feeling. And the way I've kind of scratched that itch since then is, you know, when I got to a certain level of prominence as a writer and then a producer and in games and whatnot, I started getting asked to go speak at conventions and on panels and all sorts of stuff. And suddenly I was thrust back into that position of having to go and be in front of large groups of people and speak. Mm-hmm. But even more terrifying, not as a character, but as myself, mm-hmm. which has always been fairly stressful for me. But it's something that I have a love-hate relationship with, and I continue to do it. And I go through periods myself where I feel very open to that. And so I invite it, and I think I even told you I'm in a period right now where I feel very comfortable talking about myself. There's times when I really don't like talking about myself, and so I shut all of those doors, and I those are the times when I do a lot of writing, where I'm very introspective. So I've kind of made my life, you know, something that's very binary, where there's times when I ingest lots of information and I expose myself to lots of experiences and people, and then there's times when I close the door and I go kind of into hiding for a period, and I process all of that and I output it into writing. Mm-hmm. I think the key here is that it really helps to know yourself, to know who you are, to know what your strengths and weaknesses are. And that takes time. You know, you don't discover that overnight, but the more you are truthful in your assessment of yourself, the more that you can really play to your strengths and find ways to, you know, either combat your weaknesses or shore them up with different types of experiences that help you grow.
Mm-hmm. And something I've heard in this conversation is, or something that I see a lot with people, is they go into a particular career, or they start planning and preparing for a particular career, and they have their mind really set on that. And then after they've spent a lot of time in school or in certain trainings, they feel like they have to stick with that. They're stuck. And you have given an amazing example of how that you don't have to stay in that. You don't have to be stuck in that. But really, that for you was part of the process of doing that analysis of finding out who you are. And I believe that's true, or can be true, for all of us. When we go into a particular area, it's, if we take the time to, rather than focus on this is definitely what I'm going to do, but take a look at, well, how does this really fit for me? How does this fit into my strengths and my weaknesses? And is this the right path, or will that path take me to somewhere else? Like, it clearly did you, and somewhere where it put you in this place where you could just really shine and be incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're dead on in terms of, you know, that sense of I have planned out what I want to do. That is a great thing. I mean, you know, you're a parent, I'm a parent. The sense of when our kids find the thing that they love and they decide this is what I want to do the rest of my life, it's an enormous sense of pride and relief. But lo and behold, especially with the current millennial generation, I find that that changes monthly, you know, that they find new things they want to do and they move on. And I think that sense of, again, being flexible and taking life as it comes at you and then processing it and saying, okay, what have I just learned, particularly about myself, but about, you know, what the opportunities are. And, you know, this all comes down to some pretty primal stuff about, you know, learning to trust your instincts. And that still goes back to the core of knowing who you are. And that's sometimes a very difficult thing to do. But once you know who you are, it's much easier to find your place in the world. And when you know who you are and you trust your instincts, you would be shocked at how much possibilities and opportunities gravitate around you, how much things reveal themselves to you, because you have a clarity of self and of purpose. And I have found that to be true over and over and over again. And it's one of the things, again, going back to parenthood, that's so tricky because, you know, I'm 55, I've learned a lot, and a lot of what I've learned comes from that sense of introspection and of self-examination, looking back on your life and seeing the patterns of behavior, the times when you got off track, how you got off track, and how you got back on track, and those times when things were going so well for you, what were you doing? And it's almost always trusting yourself, trusting your instinct. And when you start to question yourself and have doubt, that's when you get off track. And those are the lessons that are so fundamental, I find, to success. And you try and impart those to your kids or to younger people, and they go, ah, that sounds too easy. There's no way that's the secret. It's like, okay, well, unfortunately, you're going to have to learn it for yourself. I hope at some point those words will echo and resonate for you. But people have to figure it out themselves. And so, you know, we can talk about it. We can put the wisdom out there. But at some point, people have to put themselves in a position to learn that and to feel it for themselves. and to see how empowering that is to just simply at the most fundamental level, trust yourself and your instincts and really believe in yourself. And then a kind of corollary to all of that, it goes back to my story, is don't be scared of failure. I failed big time the first day of college. Like, there couldn't be a worse time to fail, in my opinion. I just committed 4 years to this university, which in truth is really not even a commitment. But in my mind, that was the narrative I was playing out. I had told my friends and family, I'm going to UCLA, this is what I'm going to do. Who wants to buy that back after the first day of school? It's so humiliating. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, you take the pain, you process it for a couple days, and you go, okay, now what? What have I learned? Right? And as long as you can get to that point, you can take failure and you can make it a huge success, because it put me on the path to, you know, a lot of great experiences and happiness and security at this point in my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, you really caught my attention when you were talking about failing your first day of college, and you said you had this idea that this was a commitment you made, but then you said it's not really a commitment. What do you mean by that?
What I meant was, is that I had, going back to this idea of, you know, we all write stories about ourselves, and I don't mean that literally. I mean, some people do, but I mean that in the sense of, you know, I had spent 18 years of my life trying to get into a good college, and I succeeded. I got into a good college, and everyone in my circle, my friends, family, neighbors, everything, were cheering that on in their own way. Great, you got into UCLA. You're going to go into theater. We've loved all the performances you were doing. This felt like there was a momentum of my life, and that I had committed to it. This I had literally committed 18 years to this vision of my life. Uh-huh. And then on the first day, the whole rug got pulled out from underneath me, and I suddenly felt that this vision of my life that I had committed to was completely invalidated. And I didn't have a future at that moment. And that's a really terrifying thing. And part of me felt like, no, I told everyone I was going to do this. I told myself I was going to do this. I need to just stick with it for 4 more years, right? That was the narrative I had put out there. And there was a certain degree, well, there's actually a large degree of shame and humiliation that would come in undoing that. And I didn't want to admit failure at that moment. It was it was too big. You know, you're 18 years old. You've positioned yourself for this place in the world, and then you suddenly realize that's not going to work. And I, like I said, I took a couple days and I was adrift. And then I just said, okay, so let's suppose that I do accept the new narrative that this is not going to be my path. I'm going to do something differently. What could it be? What would that look like? And when I started to stumble upon, well, I could be a writer, I got really excited about that. And I found the whole decision very liberating, to just accept the failure, to say that, you know, yes, it seems like a failure now, but I intend to make this a success. Mm-hmm. And I think that switch from kind of humiliation to excitement and enthusiasm was what transformed everything in my life. And I don't, you know, looking back on it, I would not do anything differently. I can't imagine. I can't imagine at this point in my life having actually stuck with that path and gone down the route of being an actor. It's unimaginable knowing myself the way I do now. I think that was a real kind of cold bucket of water that was poured on me, and it forced me to just kind of see myself in a different light. And I would in many ways advocate that for everybody. You know, find those places where you push yourself to a place that you have to take a hard look at yourself, and don't turn away in those moments. You know, really, what can you learn about yourself that gives you clarity to press onward?
Mm-hmm. Right. You really hit that on the nail. You said don't turn away. And going back to what you said about you in that moment feeling like you just failed and now you have no future, there's nothing left for you. That is that moment where you really are at a breaking point, or you could call it a fork in the road. Mm-hmm. You can either choose, like most people do, to let that stop them and they quit right there. And then, or you can go the other route, which is what you did, in picking yourself up and making that decision that I'm not going to make this a failure, or I'm not going to let it be a failure. I am going to make it a success. And that is an incredible tool that you have found for yourself and that you're now sharing with others.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it too, you can kind of drill down into that term success, right? And it's, you know, yes, looking back on my life now, I've been very successful in terms, just even if you look at it financially. But I think success is more importantly defined as, you know, what is it that genuinely excites you and makes you happy in life, right? I mean, and mm-hmm. to do that, I remember I had one piece of advice given to me by a friend's father. You know, it was my senior year, I think, in high school, and I had a very interesting relationship with him. He was extremely successful, and he really didn't ever talk to kids. He was very, like, one of these mysterious figures in my childhood. And one day I found myself at my friend's house looking for my friend. I walked in and I saw him, and he looked at me, and there was this weird, awkward moment. And he said, "Hey, I heard you're going to UCLA next year. What are you going to do with your life?" I said, "Well, I'm going to go into acting." "Really? Interesting." And I said, "Well, you know, you've been really successful. Can you give me any words of advice?" And he said, "Find one thing that you're good at and spend the rest of your life looking for greatness." And I thought, "Huh? That's it? Okay, thanks." And it, of course, it didn't mean anything to me as an 18-year-old. But, you know, now when I think about those words, it's like it goes to that core thing, and you hear it all the time. Find something that you really love, right? And I made the point that I had overlooked writing. It was just this thing that I did that came very easily to me. And I think that, you know, that's one of those aspects of life where you sometimes take things for granted. And I think I had really taken that gift that I had for granted. And, you know, for me, it was a lot of, you know, trying to find at 18 years old, trying to find that path in life that was going to lead me to a place of fulfillment. And I had equated success with fame and fortune and all these other things. Mm-hmm. And what I ended up discovering was, you know, there's no shame in picking something that's easy. You know, I don't have to do something that's hard and challenging. If it comes naturally to me, embrace it, and then spend the rest of my life trying to be great at it. And that in and of itself is the thing that has been consistently, you know, responsible for my happy factor, as I call it, you know, the process for me, because then I can detach myself from the results. You know, yeah, I've written a lot of stuff, but hey, I've written a lot of stuff that was bad. That was a total failure. I've been fired from jobs, but all along I had the process that I loved and this striving for greatness and that sense that no matter what I write, I can always do better. And that's been kind of the foundation of my life and to whatever degree I can say I'm successful.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Very amazing. And I'm hearing this common theme throughout. You're talking about simplicity. Pick something simple. It doesn't have to be hard. Your friend's dad says, yeah, find something you really love. And you're like, how can it be that simple? And you talked about parenting and what we tell our kids. And yeah, and we, so badly, we want to show them how simple it can be. And generally, they make it much harder. But even as adults, we do tend to do that as well. We make things difficult. And when we find something simple, there's this normal human tendency to think that that can't possibly be the right answer, just like you had expressed in thinking, no way, it can't be that easy.
No, it's true. And I'll tell you that it mirrors, you know, the creative process too. We as, you know, creators, whether it's artists, musicians, painters, whatever, we tend to think that the more complex and intellectual we make something, the better it will be, the better received it will be. When in fact, it's always the art of simplicity that is the hardest thing to achieve. And it's that sense of, you know, when you stop thinking and you just give yourself over to feeling and trusting those instincts, that's when you get to the essence of what's great and what's and that sense of simplicity. And, you know, I use the word trust a lot because I will admit I'm a spiritual person but not a religious person. And I have come to really trust the universe. And what I mean by that is when things happen to me, whether it's, you know, walking into a classroom and being told to be a wave and as you said, finding that very inopportune fork in the road in my life, if you learn to say, okay, that happened. Now what? How, you know, I can't choose what's going to happen to me, but I can choose how I respond to it.
Exactly.
And if I fight it and I let that get me down, then I've chosen suffering. Mm-hmm. If I say, you know what, I'm going to take this for what it is. I'm going to take this as a sign that I should look within and find something else. Then I can see that smack in the face as opportunity. So I can either choose suffering or opportunity. And if I trust that the things that happen to me are always giving me that choice, then it's up to me, you know, how I want to view my life and what I want to make of my life. And, you know, failures, you know, are something that we have seem to systematically kind of breed out of society. No one wants failures. I mean, it's my biggest complaint with the education system now is that kids are so coddled and protected and everything's meant to make them feel like a success. But in fact, the best thing that can happen to people is failures because it forces them to learn how to respond to them. And, you know, going back to something I said about this sense of commitment, that is a false narrative. We commit to something in the moment, and yes, there's a virtue and a value in finishing what you started. But at the same time, you know, if you're in a bad situation, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a job, whatever it is, you can at any time make the choice to say, okay, I'm going to trust the universe that this is not what I should be doing right now. This is not good for me. I'm going to do something else. I'm going to admit failure, accept it, and learn from it and move on and try something new and not get mired down in the shame and the guilt that is oftentimes incumbent in those decisions. And then oftentimes worse keeps us from ever making a change.
Mm-hmm. That's scary.
I know. It's very scary.
Mm-hmm. I had written in my recent book, Overcoming Roadblocks to Success, I had written about this a little bit, and I talked about failures and being learning opportunities, just as you have stated, and that we should use those that we can use those failures as opportunities to drive us or propel us forward, which is exactly what you're saying here. And that is such a great message. And I would just love to be able to share that message throughout the world because so many people, as you've indicated, are so afraid of failure. And because of that, people aren't moving. They're not growing. And that is scary.
You know what? I think I feel honored that I've plagiarized you.
Only doing so without reading it?
Yeah. But I think that as you were saying that, it makes me realize that, you know, a great idea for a book is somebody that writes a how to fail. Like, I'm gonna write a book about how you go about failing, right? And then turning that into a new success story for yourself. Because I think there's such an aversion people have to failure because it hits at the very core of our being. It bruises our ego. And you know, once you can get past that, once you can learn to do it, you can really then achieve greatness because there's nothing holding you back from trying things that maybe are above your pay grade, as they say. But the thing that's interesting is oftentimes, you know, when you go back and look at success stories, the most successful people, if you look on paper at where they were at their life and whatnot, they had no right to try and achieve what they did.
Isn't that true?
but they went for it, right? With no fear of failure. And probably against a lot of headwind and a lot of people telling them it will never happen. It will never work. You know, I'll share another anecdote with you that is, you know, not work related, but life choice related. And that was, you know, in 2005 about, my wife and I, who were living in LA at the time, you know, decided, hey, we each came from, childhoods where she was living in the Midwest, and she had, you know, her family had 4 or 5 acres and, you know, kind of out in rural country outside of St. Louis. And I grew up in the Bay Area in the Berkeley Hills on 3.5 acres with no neighbors. And so our childhoods were very unbound. You know, the door was rarely ever locked. The kids were always out just running and playing, and it was just, there was a lot of freedom. Now, granted, that was the time. But, you know, raising kids in Los Angeles in, you know, the early 2000s, you know, there were literally kids on leashes. And then there were also the metaphorical leashes. Like, you never let your kids out of your sight. That just did not happen. And we thought, you know, I wonder, could we move someplace where we could actually let our kids off of those metaphorical leashes and give them back their childhood? And our kids were at that time about 5.5 and 3. And we decided, you know what, let's move up north. And that brought us up into the Pacific Northwest to Whidbey Island, where we got 5 acres. We basically recreated my wife and I's childhood and let our kids. But leading up to that decision, because I was working a lot in the entertainment industry, my lawyer, my manager, my agents, all said, if you move, if you leave this town, your career is effectively over. And I had a lot of friends in the business saying, oh my God, I mean, that would be wonderful, but what are you going to do now? Are you going to go teach? Are you going to be a contractor? Because you're not going to be doing what you were doing before. And I thought, well, I appreciate that sentiment, and I probably have to accept that there is some truth to that, but I refuse to accept it. I will continue to work, and here's what I actually think will happen. I will move out of the city, and I will gain a much greater sense of self. I will have more time to myself. I won't be caught up in the rat race. I won't be caught up in the paranoia, all of the things that infect living in Los Angeles. And I will probably actually become a better writer because I'll become more in touch with myself. And guess what happened? Exactly what I predicted. And not only have I not stopped working, I've worked more and turned down more offers since I left. And so the message there is, don't accept other people's fears as your own.
I love it. Those are great words of advice, words of wisdom. I absolutely love that. And I think that would be a great message to leave off with. What do you think?
I think so too. I don't think I can top it, to be honest.
That was pretty incredible. Well, you have shared so many, not just that, but so many incredible pieces of wisdom, and through everything that you've done, been an example of everything that you have shared. You walk the talk, and that's just absolutely beautiful. And I am so honored to have met you and and to have the opportunity to get to know you, and especially honored to have been able to have you on the show today so that you could share all of those bits of wisdom with all of my listeners. And again, Brent, I want to thank you so much for being a part of this and for sharing everything that you've shared.
Absolutely. I'm really happy that you asked me to do this. It's been a great conversation. And I have to say, the reason that I decided to do this was because when you told me about your fear as a child of public speaking and whatnot, and then you said that you had actually now started writing books and doing a podcast where you were putting yourself out there, I thought, you know what, that's really inspiring. And I wanted to be a part of your world. So this has been really fun.
Wow. Thank you, Brent.
Great.
Thank you for tuning in to the Rockstar Achievers Podcast. If you are looking to reach new levels of success by plowing through your roadblocks, outsmarting your competition, growing a flourishing business, or reaching unparalleled levels of performance, go to www.acceleratedresults365.com or email Catherine at catherine@acceleratedresults365.com and learn how you can get started with Accelerated Results 365 today.